This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Payne, Pendergast, and an hour early today because we are replaying our Deshaun Watson interview from last night's evening with Deshaun Watson at 8 o'clock. So kind enough to come in at 7 o'clock is the General John McClain, brought to you by HornSolutions.net. John, how are we doing today, my friend?
Great. Talk about good timing. Timing's everything about life. Imagine having Watson this week compared to, say, last week.
Yeah. After the Carolina game, I think he still would have been great. I think he still would have been playful and as engaging as he was last night, but it certainly made it easier to... Made it easier all the way around.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to ask him all negative questions.
That's right. That's right.
That was a real coup getting him in here. Deshaun's a really good guy. One of the reasons I've said I think they'll win a Super Bowl with him is the kind of person he is. And he's a good person. He's respected. He doesn't have a big ego. He's loaded with confidence, of course, as he should be, considering what he accomplished at Clemson and what he's done up to this point so far. He doesn't get down after a performance like Carolina, which was terrible on offense, and he doesn't get sky high after an incredible performance like he had against Atlanta. And that even keel, I think, keeps him cool under pressure. And there's just this game coming up between him and Mahomes, who's the same way. There's not a lot of regular season games where I get so excited about like a playoff game, because I've covered so many in my 43 years, but this one I am. Watson versus Mahomes, probably the first of many they're going to have in their career, should be wide open, exciting, and it could be the first of two this year.
That would be nice if it were the first of two this year, because obviously that would mean the next one would be in the postseason. John, what's the potential for this rivalry over the next several years? If Mahomes is at that MVP level already, Deshaun is progressing towards that level and statistically has done some things that even Patrick Mahomes hasn't done yet early in his career. Deshaun's obviously a great quarterback. Some of these AFC quarterbacks are going to be retiring pretty soon that have been involved in some of the big rivalries. What's the potential for a Mahomes and a Watson rivalry over the next several years?
I think Andy Reid wants to keep coaching for a long time. Andy's a great offensive coach. He and Mahomes obviously get it. And one of the things a story I'm doing for tomorrow is, what did Reid and O'Brien see about not just their quarterbacks, but the other quarterback when they were scouting them before the 2017 draft? You know, what did Reid see that made him confident he could go up as far as he did in the first round and give up so much to get Mahomes, who a lot of people thought, well, he's a product of that Texas Tech system, and none of those guys pan out. And then what the Texans saw in Deshaun Watson, and then I want to know what Reid thought of Watson. I want to know what Bill thought of Mahomes at the time. And so I think these two, you know, Trubisky was drafted ahead of them right now. Nobody would put him in their class. And the thing about these other guys, you know, Brady says he's going to play at least 45. Rodgers, Breeze, they want to play multiple years more. So these guys may be 30 years old before those older guys decide to walk away. And Russell Wilson wants to play into his 40s.
Russell Wilson does? I think that's going to be the standard now. Everybody's going to, unless you treat your body like Big Ben treats his, guzzling beer and riding helmetless on motorcycles, then I think we're cool. As long as we don't see Deshaun Watson tooling around town with no helmet on, right, on his motorcycle.
Standing on camels is okay as long as it's not moving.
I still believe that was Photoshopped. The you should have asked him that last night, Sean. Why are you not asking the hard-hitting questions?
I should have. You're right.
Dude, you did talk to him about his world trip, but you didn't have much time to get into whether or not
that. We asked him about that, and he said he was on it, and the guy was speaking to it, and language, he didn't have any idea, and he got up and he said, you know what, I'm going to see if I can stand on him.
John, what's you mentioned Mahomes and Watson. Obviously, picked two picks apart in 2017. Mahomes 10th, Watson 12th. We know who the preference was for the Chiefs because they were picking 10th. They picked Mahomes. Have we ever had any intel as to what the Texans would have done if Mahomes and Watson were on the board? Was Deshaun always their guy?
Have no idea. No. They like Mahomes a lot, too. I talked to them before that draft. Both of them were talking up both those quarterbacks. Didn't hear him talking up Trubisky like they were Mahomes and Watson.
That makes me feel better.
I know, but what if it was? We always ask, like, would they have taken Mahomes or what? Yeah.
And it could have been. I mean, they had to get a quarterback.
Yeah.
And maybe it would have been Trubisky down. It's hard to believe right now. Of course, so much can change, but did Ryan Pace, GM of the Bears, thought so highly of Trubisky after 1 year as a starter at North Carolina. And he swapped spots with San Francisco to get him at 2. But the fact that he had access to both of those quarterbacks, wouldn't have to trade anything, he's going to hear about that the rest of his career.
You know the thing, you mentioned that a lot of people would be skeptical of Mahomes because he comes from the air raid system. And that is true, except that now all of a sudden there are quite a few young quarterbacks from air raid systems in the NFL. And it just always works out this way in the NFL. The trends, there are a bunch of teams that follow the trends, but then there are the guys like Bill Belichick that set the trends, and then everybody ends up copying them. I'll give Andy Reid a lot of credit for having already done a lot of stuff with Alex Smith that worked in well with what they wanted to do with Pat Mahomes. You know, Andy Reid had incorporated a lot of college elements because it suited Alex Smith really well, and they were able to build on that with Pat Mahomes. I wonder the Texans, if they would have been similarly minded, if they were more open-minded to it than perhaps other teams.
Of air raid type elements?
Yeah, yeah. My gut would tell me no.
My gut would tell me no, except for, John, the first six games of Deshaun Watson's career in his rookie year, it felt like they were incorporating early on. It felt like early on, O'Brien was incorporating a lot of Clemson stuff.
Out of necessity, though. That's always the question.
Is I know,
it out
that's
of
what's
necessity
strange.
Or, yeah.
That's what's strange about it.
They were
throwing
the ball all over the place. One of the things that impressed me in this game Sunday, and I went back and watched it ever play over and over like I always do, is some of the formations. They'd have Fells and Akins lined up outside. They'd have Fuller and Hopkins inside. They played a lot of two tight ends. That's another thing I'm writing about for Friday is about the way they're utilizing the tight ends right now. They've got 5 touchdown pass receptions. And there's a lot of things that Bill O'Brien feels comfortable doing now that he's got better protection. And I wrote about this yesterday. According to Next Generation Stats, Watson got rid of the ball quicker than any time this year. And he had been among the 4 slowest in the first 4 games. And in this one, he got rid of it faster than he ever has. And when I went back after I read that and watched it, in most cases, man, that back foot hit and the ball was out.
Right, and I think part of that, and after talking to a few people, I think it was both a Deshaun Watson and a Bill O'Brien shift in psychology that led to that. I think if there's a fatal flaw for either of those guys that they have to get over, and I think maybe they have, it's that they want to be too perfect all the time. You know, Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson, at times it feels like they want to have the perfect game plan, the perfect pass every single time, the perfect play on every single play. And dialing up the perfect play is great and all, but sometimes it is just a matter of taking the easy money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a combination of Bill O'Brien stressing and focusing on it during the week with Deshaun Watson grasping and understanding that. I feel like that was a breakthrough moment. And maybe it took, I know the Falcons. The Falcons are on pace to have one of the worst defenses ever in terms of opponent quarterback rating. The problem is that the Dolphins are head and shoulders above them. The Dolphins are going to screw up all these records all this year for ineptitude. But I think maybe it took playing a team like the Falcons to have that taste of success doing it.
Yeah.
That's going to pay dividends when you start to face other good defenses and you realize, okay, there's a different way to do this. We don't have to make this rocket science every single time.
O'Brien, Tim Kelly, and Carl Smith got together after that Carolina debacle, offensive debacle, not defense, of course. And they said, this is what they, well, you know, what can we do? Here's what we're going to do. they met with Watson about it, as they do every week, and they told him what they wanted to do, and they worked on it in practice, and that's good coaching, and that's good playing to actually execute it. And in the two games in which Watson has had his five starting linemen, he has 777 yards, eight touchdowns, no interceptions, and that would have been the victory over the Chargers and the Falcons. Now they've got those five back for Kansas City.
Nice to see Will Fuller, John, break out in that game on Sunday. Was this just a matter of Will Fuller's Sunday to get the football?
Yeah, a lot of it was the coverage. It was amazing how many times Hopkins would run a route, especially a crossing route across the middle of the field, and three guys would go with him. So I would imagine the Chiefs now, they see what Fuller's done, and they're going to have to – I don't know how you double him and Hopkins. I would imagine the tight ends don't – I don't know if Kenny Stills is coming back. You know, that was a bad hamstring injury. But if he doesn't, it's good they got Kiki QT. So I could see QT in the tight ends getting a lot of action in the middle of the field. Think about Fuller. Remember against Jacksonville, he's open, dropped a bomb. And then against Carolina, he was open, and Watson overthrew him. Had they connected on that one, then they would have won the game. And so their offense right now, because of the versatility, passing to set up the run, their 10th in rushing, is the most prolific I've seen here because of all the weapons.
All right, we will ask John, coming right out of the break in the next segment, if the Astros lose tomorrow, is that a bigger disappointment than the Oilers blowing a 35-3 lead in Buffalo back in the early 90s? We will do that next. 8 o'clock hour today, we will be replaying the Deshaun Watson interview from last night, an evening with Deshaun Watson. We'll replay that in the 8 o'clock hour. So be tuned in for that. John, the question that we have been discussing before you came in this morning, and you've got the best historical perspective, certainly in this studio and certainly on this topic, because you were there when the Houston Oilers blew a 35-3 lead to the Buffalo Bills. If the Astros go on to lose this series to the Tampa Bay Rays, can you compare these two things, and which will have been worse if the Astros were to go on to lose this series to the Rays?
This will be a bigger choke job because the Astros are the best team in baseball because they won the first two with the two best pitchers in baseball. And they go to a stadium that seats 32,000. It's not like I know it's loud. Sometimes I think it's loud that TV turns up the crowd noise. And to have Verlander come back, even on short rest, because this took place over a period of days. You had multiple chances. You will have had three chances to close this one out. And in that game, it didn't draw any hype. It wasn't even televised locally in Buffalo. People don't realize that because, you know, like a million people say they were there. And it was a wild card game. Those were not the two best teams in their conference, but you know, it's still the biggest choke in NFL history, 35-3 in the third quarter, and always will be until somebody blows one bigger, which is hard to believe that anybody ever will.
John, I think any time a team blows a lead in a game, blows a lead in a series, there's always sort of that turning point where as a fan of the team that's blowing the lead at the time, you have this realization, this, oh, crap, this might happen. I don't think we're there with the Astros yet because I think most Astro fans are still confident they're going to win solely because Gerrit Cole is going in Game 5.
And because they're at Minute Maid Park.
And they're at Minute Maid Park, right. My point is the Astro fans have not arrived at that point yet where they're going, wow, they may lose this thing. At least I don't think most of them
have. I said a lot of things on Twitter last night with a lot of people already expecting them to lose, and they've been great at Minute Maid. Cole's been great. He had never, for anybody that said they should have pitched him last night, which is ridiculous, he'd never pitched on short rest either. And I had no problem at all with him. I'd rather see him go down with Verlander than Rikiti. You know, the bullpen pitched well, but still, you want your best guys out there in playoff baseball. Sometimes guys have to do things they're not asked to do during regular season. They just got beat by a pitching staff that totally shut down their hitters and that great play in which they had the two relay throws to get out to the plate It had to be perfect. It was, and the Rays deserved to win that game.
Okay, anybody who's saying they should have pitched Cole last night, please give them my Uber account and drive them up to the studio here so I can tell them to their face what an idiot they are. It would have been 2 days rest. That's absolutely silly. The reason I bring up that turning point thing, John, is just not to relive a horrible thing. What was the point in that Oiler game where, as somebody who was there, you started to realize, oh my God, they may lose this thing?
When after the Bills scored, there was an onside kick. Jack Bardee did not have the Oilers ready for an onside kick, and the Bills tried it and they got it and they scored. And at that point, we're like, oh my God, could they actually blow this game? And you know, they fell behind and had to tie that game to go into overtime.
Yeah,
and then they lost on the field goal, but they had blown that lead, fallen behind, and then come back on an Al Del Greco field goal before they lost. This one seems like it's drawn out. If they actually lose at Minute Maid, which I don't believe they will, but if they did, it'd be like you were tortured over multiple days and not just for a quarter and a half.
Yeah, it's like the Chinese water torture.
Sorry. Right.
Gosh, I hope we don't lose any sponsorships over that.
Be careful.
Oh, no, but China
right.
doesn't
Government
come after
maybe.
Us. So
thanks, Maury.
Yeah. The problem is, you know, John, I'd like to say I'm confident that they'll win game five, but I don't understand necessarily what reason I have to be confident, because the Rays pitching is some of the best pitching in Major League Baseball. And no matter how good Gerrit Cole has been, if the bats don't come around, Gerrit Cole can pitch a shutout for seven innings, and all of a sudden Osuna's up in the ninth, and I don't know how confident I feel about the Astros' ability. If it gets – okay, what if it's the ninth inning and it's tied 0-0, and you're going to go into extra innings at that point? Where are you going to feel about that?
Not great.
Yeah.
Not great
well,
at all.
We've said all the over the second half of the season, their undoing would be their bullpen. Now, it wasn't last night. The bullpen did a terrific job. And in the game where Osuna stunk it up, I blame that on Hinch, asking him to do something he hadn't done all year for four-out save. He is better when he comes in and nobody's on base to start an inning.
John McLean in studio with us for his weekly visit. I guess the reason I asked you about the sort of the turning point where you go, oh, crap, in that Oiler game is what would that point – what would have to happen in the Astro game tomorrow night to have that same feeling? For me, it's – if the Rays do what they did to Verlander, which is scratch together a couple of runs in the first inning, that's where, John, I'm all of a sudden going to feel like the Rays are going to do this. At this, you know, there's a really good chance.
They're hitting home runs. They're hitting the ball hard. I thought last night Ed Altuve scored, and Alvarez ended up on second, of course. Another hit would have put them back in it. But jumping on Verlander, hitting the ball as hard as they did with Greinke, against Greinke, and then Wade Miley, I've never seen a pitcher melt down late in the season like Wade Miley has, and that would be it. Now, if this one, if they fall behind by two runs, then I'm going to start thinking this could really happen.
Yeah.
Because they've been so good. You know, people talk about bringing a pitcher in and pitching him two times in 3 days. Well, the Rays are going to do it. They're going to have – they pitched six pitchers last night. They're going to Anderson is the only one who pitched more than he usually does, so he might be one to keep an eye on if they decide to – bring him in. But right now, the way Cash has manipulated that staff, he's doing a masterful job. And but I still think with Cole on the mound playing at Minute Maid, I think the bats are going to come out of their slumber and they're going to win. And then they'll go on against the well-rested, very well-rested Yankees.
Very well-rested with the rotation all in the order that they want it. Let me ask you guys this. How high up the food chain, how high up the pecking order – if you're in need of an inning, or maybe even just an out, but an inning or two innings tomorrow in a close game, how high up the pecking order in the bullpen is a on 2 days rest Zach Greinke?
I wouldn't hesitate. Just like Max Scherzer, they're talking about if they need Scherzer tonight for an inning.
Verlander's out, right?
He's ready to go.
Verlander threw 83 pitches. He's out.
You know, I think if one inning, it's the playoffs. If Verlander would volunteer, he had the velocity last night. He didn't. Have the low, his ball didn't move.
So he's in play for you, Verlander.
He would be in play for me for one inning, one out. He came in relief 2 years ago. You know, he is a grinder. He's experienced. I wouldn't hesitate to bring him back.
Okay. What about you, Seth?
Wait, John, you're saying Verlander or Greinke?
Verlander. I would bring Verlander back for an inning. A guy, it's playoff baseball. I guarantee he'd want it.
But would you bring him back? Because he asked you Greinke. Would you bring him back before Greinke?
Oh, I thought you said Verlander.
No, I said Greinke.
Yeah. Oh, Greinke. I don't trust Greinke for everything. I'd bring back Verlander before Greinke.
But he is still, I mean, he's your third best pitcher. So for one inning of relief, but after, I don't trust him on short rest. He doesn't need that right now. Greinke doesn't need that on his brain, especially when, boy, you can't.
Okay, so you go to Josh James instead.
Oh, my gosh.
You know what I mean? Like this Hector Rendon. Yeah. I'm saying in spots where you normally wouldn't go, spots where you wouldn't go to Presley or Osuna normally or Will Harris. I'm talking about Cole gets you through five innings. Let's say it's 2-2 after five innings. You've got a high leverage spot, couple guys on base. Cole's pitch count is at about 100.
Cole's not allowed to only go five innings. He's on full rest. Cole's going seven innings.
So you'd need one inning.
I'm saying you need the sixth inning from somebody.
You need one inning. Give me a guy. Boy, Rondon had pitched so well down the stretch. You don't have confidence. I'd seriously think about giving Verlander an inning.
Okay.
Before I went to Harris, Presley, and Osuna.
Okay. I guess my overall question is Greinke in play to pitch in this thing?
I would not trust him. He has not pitched well during the playoffs any time in his career.
It's so crazy. Like, Greinke's one of the best pitchers of the last decade.
In regular season.
And right. I think it's funny. But, I mean, like, he's being discussed like he's a fourth or fifth starter on an average.
That's how he pitches in the postseason. You have to try to do everything you can to win this series, but I think you have to have something in the back of your mind about what are you going to do in the next series, which is Greinke starting game one for now.
True.
So I don't think you can sacrifice that.
What's a good point.
What's the sense in getting through this if all of a sudden you've got Greinke starting? You got to use a reliever game for game one. You're not going to send Verlander out there again on short rest again.
That's a really good point. If you pitch Greinke at all in game five, even though in theory, like you... baseball managers tend to be in this, hey, man, we got to use everything available to us to win this. We'll worry about the next series when it comes. I think it's a really good point.
If he goes in and pitches one inning, then you could conceivably start him again, but then you can't expect him to go deep into game one.
I don't even know if Greinke's a guy I want throwing off of a routine. You know what I mean? Like, if he's got to start in game one. So that's a really good point. Like, if the thing that differentiates you from these other playoff teams are those three starters, Cole, Verlander, and Greinke, now, all of a sudden, all of their rest is wonky going into the ALCS. Like, they're all pitching on weird cycles.
Cole and Verlander can handle it. I don't think Greinke can. I think that Greinke, only way I would pitch him in this game is if it goes extra innings and you have to.
All right, let's dig into it. We have one more segment with John McClain. Top of the hour, we're going to be replaying throughout the 8 o'clock hour our interview with Deshaun Watson last night up here exclusively at Sports Radio 610. Let's dig into this Chiefs game. Some reasons... why Seth has some reasons why he thinks the Chiefs are vulnerable. We'll see what John McClain thinks about it next. All right, so Seth, you've got some reasons why you think the Chiefs are vulnerable this week. Why don't you lay the biggest couple of those out there, and let John react to them.
Let's steal a segment from In the Loop. Where what do they do? What do they do when you give?
You leg hike on things,
you
right,
leg
John?
Hike. Yeah,
no leg hiking.
Yeah. Do you like that segment?
No.
He's leg hiking
because of what it means. I told him when they first did that, I said, can we do thumbs up or thumbs down? And they said, no, we're leg hiking.
And Landon, so despite your continued protestations,
I've never said anything since originally. It's their show, and if they want me to
hike a leg on them, going full Matt Lauer on you.
Because I spend a lot of time where they need umbrellas.
Yes, you have.
I actually don't think this will be much of a leg hiking segment. There's reason to believe that the Chiefs at this point, especially, are kind of vulnerable.
Right.
Not that, listen, everybody settle down. I'm not saying the Texans have to face a vulnerable team to beat them. But it's nice. It works out in your favor.
Yes.
The biggest and most notable one, John, obviously, is that the last time we saw Pat Mahomes, he was hobbling around with a bum ankle, and it really affected his game. How much do you think that ankle is going to affect him this week?
I saw a stat about what he did before the ankle injury and what he did afterward, and it was not anywhere near the same. And I saw a ground-level shot of what happened to his ankle, and he's lucky it wasn't broken. So you know it was sore this week, especially early in the week. And if they get Tyreek Hill back, of course, that'll make a heck of a difference. They're not running the ball well. They're not stopping the run well. Patriots beat them in the playoff game by pounding the ball at them. The Colts did the same thing. Mahomes can't score when he's on the bench. But on the other hand, do you want to take the ball out of Watson's hands? No. Mm. To me, you want to win or lose with Watson. Use the pass to set up the run the way they have been. and the Chiefs' defense is vulnerable. But right now, it's all about Mahomes and his receivers. And one of the reasons they signed Tashaun Gibson was cover good tight ends like Travis Kelce. I can't wait to see that matchup.
That's interesting because, you know, you say you don't want to keep the ball out of Deshaun Watson's hands. I think the fewer number of possessions you have in this game, the better. For one, just because as much as I trust Deshaun Watson, I have an equal or greater level of concern about the Texans' secondary. So in my mind, I'm kind of imagining on the balance scales what concerns me more versus what excites me the most. And I think my concern about the Texans' defensive backfield concerns me a lot. I don't want Pat Mahomes out there, especially if his ankle is feeling better, which leads me to my second reason, John, that the Chiefs might be vulnerable. And this isn't just a this week thing. This is an every week thing. Their run defense is atrocious. So this Texans team, where more times than not this year, you felt good about them running the ball. A couple times they haven't felt so great, but more times than not, you're saying you don't think they should necessarily exploit that all that much.
I think this, the one team that they were supposed to run on the most, the Chargers, limited them to 39 yards. And in all the other games, they've averaged more than 140, or right up at 140. So for whatever reason, the Chargers knew their run defense had been bad, and they designed it to stop the run, and Watson threw for 351. Breeze, Rivers, and Ryan all threw for more than 300 yards. They all had a rating of more than 100 against them, and yet they beat two and could have beaten Breeze. So Mahomes is going to throw for a lot of yards. The key is, does he get more than one touchdown like he did against the Colts?
The other reason, too, and this is kind of a this week thing, the Chiefs offensive line, they're banged up. Eric Fisher is hurt. Andrew Wiley is, I'm not sure if he's playing this week, but he's banged up, too. They've got the Laurent Davernier Bujavajibiazo.
The doctor.
The Pepe Le Pew. I call him Pepe Le Pew.
The MD.
Pepe Le Pew has been a big theme on the show today.
Right. Well, we got the guy. Remember, this is the guy that wanted to have his MD put on his jersey.
Oh, that's right.
And for that, I despise him.
Yeah.
He just needs his ego stoked a little bit.
Right.
So that's one of the things that really hurt the Chiefs versus the Colts. The Colts pressured the Chiefs on 40% of their passing downs. I'm feeling better and better about this Texans pass rush every single week. I feel like that, if there's a key to this game, it might be that J.J. Whitney, and then whether it's Amenihu, D.J. Reed, or somebody else, they need to really harass Pat Mahomes, especially if his ankle's a little banged up.
They hit Ryan a lot and sacked him twice. And Mahomes, if he can't move around and make plays off schedule as he always does, or at least not as effectively, then they should be able to at least hit him. The key is Hill back. If Hill comes back, that just gives them one more with Robinson and Hardman, three receivers that can run like crazy. But I tell you what, with the Texans receivers and the way the tight ends are fitting into the passing game, I don't know if there's any team that has more weapons than the Texans do.
This is the other thing that the Colts did to help upend the Chiefs that was kind of a surprise to a lot of people. The Colts are a zone-based defense. They played a lot of man defense. And the Chiefs this year have not been nearly as good versus man defense as they have versus zone. And especially when your quarterback, man defense can be trouble at times versus a mobile quarterback because the defensive backs have their back turned to the field. With Mahomes' ankle banged up especially, I feel like you don't have to worry about it. But again, John, we come back to my concerns about the defensive backfield. How confident are you if the Texans go into a game and say, hey, we're going to play a bunch of man this week?
Well, I'm never confident with their secondary based on the yardage they've given up. And so Mahomes will throw for over 300 yards. It's accepted. All the good quarterbacks have thrown for more than 300 against them. But can they keep him out of the end zone? So I don't care if the pass rush is good or not. He's going to throw for a lot of yards.
Worth pointing out, I guess, that Tyreek Hill had one of his worst games going man-to-man against Bradley Roby.
Yep.
I believe it was last season?
Last season.
Four catches, 23 yards. I think I heard the guys on
and
in the
Bradley Roby,
about.
I'm sure, will be all over him. Deshaun Gibson will be all over Travis Kelce. And then they've got a matchup against Hardman and that kid, is it DeMarcus Robinson? Is that his name?
Yes.
Who's kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
John, you mentioned the field level view of Pat Mahomes' ankle injury. I hadn't seen this. Was it pretty bad?
It was a shot behind him, and his leg was planted, and I can't remember if it was a teammate, somebody's leg slid into that ankle from the side and bent it in.
Yeah.
And it just looked painful.
Is the ankle the joint most likely to look like it was destroyed and then it ends up just being a minor sprain?
Easily.
You think about, like, in basketball, some of the times you see guys' ankles go, their feet go completely sideways.
100%.
It's strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
God bless the ankle.
Yeah.
It's a tease. It's a little bit of a tease. It'll scare you, but then it bounces right back
up. It's the underrated joint.
Yeah.
It doesn't get enough credit for its resiliency.
My ranking of non-sexual body parts would definitely have ankle near the top.
Mm,
I mean, the sexual parts are all at the top for the most part.
Of course, they're like the Patriots.
Other than the ones that have wronged me at times. And but yeah, the ankle is up there for non-sexual.
And will wrong you as the older you get.
Ah, Sean's told me there's a chew for that.
Yes. Yeah. Bluechew.com. Promo.
But I've never needed any extra drugs for my ankles as I've gotten older.
I don't know that one exists. Bluechew for ankles.
Well, there's Aleve.
Yeah, that's true. CBD oil, things like that. So, John, do you have a prediction on the game yet?
Not yet. I'm going to pick the Chiefs to win. The spread's 5. Texans, all their games have been close except this last one. So I'll pick the Chiefs to beat them probably 3 or 4.
I think that's something worth mentioning. You mentioned the spread being 5, and this plays into what you were talking about with Mahomes' injury, Seth. The spread opened at 8.5, and the people that tend to move the line like that tend to know things about injuries and have contacts and information and things like that. When a line moves that rapidly that doesn't involve the out-and-out absence of a player, it means that there is some piece of information out there that the public market did not fully vet.
The things that I would think about is maybe the odds makers know Hill's not going to play,
okay,
or they know that that Mahomes will play, of course, but he will be hobbled because of his ankle. Anytime anybody's got an ankle injury, they're limited.
It's going to be, if it's any of those two things, John, it's going to be the latter, only because the one play, even a player as great as Tyreek Hill would never move a line 3.5 points, probably a point and a half at the most. 3.5 points is a Mahomes is more banged up than we think type of line move. So we'll see what happens. Let's do some headlines in studio with John McClain.
The 2-2 pitch. Launch toward left. Back at it is Brantley. He looks up. It's 1-0 Rays. Tommy Pham homers here. 2 batters in, and the Rays take a 1-0 lead here in the bottom of the first.
Astros are up against it now, tied at 2 in the ALDS with the Rays, who win their second consecutive game at home, 10-3 in Game 3 earlier this week. And then last night, 4-1, they chased Justin Verlander after 3 2/3 innings on 3 days rest. It'll be Gerrit Cole going tomorrow on full rest in Game 5 of this series. At this point, John, Seth, my feeling on this, the bats just need to wake up at this point. The starting pitch, Zach Greinke was bad in Game 3. Honestly, 4 runs, even with Verlander giving up the 4 runs, at some point, if you're the Astros and you have this quote-unquote historic offense, you need to have some games where you score 6-7 runs.
They swing at so many bad pitches. Yeah. Gurriel swung at some terrible pitches that bounced. Alvarez swung at some bad pitches. Springer's jumps on the first pitch. They got to be a little more disciplined. And if I'm the Rays, I'm not throwing anything in the strike zone on the first pitch. I'm seeing if those guys will lack the discipline at home that they lacked in Tampa. But I still think the bats are going to come alive. Cole will pitch well. Bullpen will pitch well. They'll win and move on to the Yankees.
In some ways, their skill as hitters and their professionalism as hitters almost works against them with a team like the Rays, because you don't have that advantage of going to the second and third time through the order.
That's right.
It's that, oh, I might see this guy twice, and then it's on to the next one. And all of Brantley's professional hitterism is all for naught.
Because the Rays use like 9 pitchers a game, is that what you're saying?
It's just the perfectly constructed team to upend the Astros.
Does it bother the Rays to have to keep using the same guys?
Apparently not.
I mean, look, that's their MO during the regular season.
Do what you got to do. Yeah.
Their playoff baseball mentality is the same as their regular season baseball mentality.
Yeah.
That's the thing of it.
Serves them well. The ongoing saga between the NBA and China continued yesterday when there was an NBA Cares event in Shanghai that was to involve the Los Angeles Lakers. It was canceled. Actually, it was canceled today's Wednesday, right? Earlier today. Just hours before it was scheduled to begin, adding to the fallout from a recent tweet by Rockets general manager Daryl Morey that showed support for the anti-government protesters in Hong Kong. The NBA would only say that calling off the event, which was supposed to benefit the Special Olympics, was not its decision. A fan event that was scheduled for Wednesday was also canceled. John, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on this Daryl Morey tweet story in China?
I've seen all these predictions about how much money it's going to cost the NBA, more than $1 billion. And John Lopez predicted on In the Loop yesterday Daryl would not be back next year. And I think that if Tillman Fertitta fired Daryl Morey because Daryl is for free speech, which is one of our rights as Americans, with all the businesses Tillman has that rely on people who believe in free speech, then I just don't think Tillman would do that. He's too smart. And if the Chinese want to kick and scream like little kids in a sandbox who are unhappy, let them do it. You know, they need us. I've been to China twice. There's American stuff over there like crazy. Companies, you know, they take advantage of our food, everything we have to offer. So we make a lot of money off them, but they make a lot of money off us too. And I think eventually it'll blow over, as I said somewhere yesterday, it's about diplomacy. I think it's great. What do we read into the fact the president, I don't think he's commented with a tweet.
He has not.
Well, because this is what we're going to do. We're going to relax our basketball tariffs is what we'll do. This is how this all works into
That's
the trade.
That's how it plays
out? Yeah, we'll relax our basketball tariffs.
All right, third headline. You're going to start seeing Rob Gronkowski, guys, on Sunday again, just not in uniform. He has been hired by Fox, the former New England Patriots tight end, to appear as a regular analyst on its Fox NFL Sunday show. This was reported by Ian Rappaport and Mike Garofolo of the NFL Network. Fox Sports confirmed the reports in a tweet Tuesday, noting that Gronk will make his broadcast debut on Thursday night ahead of the Patriots game against the New York Giants. John, how excited are you for Rob Gronkowski, football analyst?
Well, I don't get to see any of the shows, but I know they're number one because they're Fox and they got the big markets. The only thing I don't like is when you have too many on a stage before a game talking about a game. I just soon hear Gronkowski and nobody else because I think the guy will be terrific and he's not coming back, so he'll be very opinionated.
But the whole thing is, and this is why those pregame shows never get a lot of love on sports radio shows or on the internet, because those are designed for the casual fan. Those are for people that check in and maybe they just don't even know who they're, like, they haven't paid attention all week, and you get the major flyover and some big names and people I know. I know Gronk, and this is what he said. I have a hard time criticizing those shows because they serve a different audience.
They do. They definitely do. Here's what intrigues me about it is that as clownish as Gronk comes across sometimes, as meatheadish as he comes across sometimes, he is reputedly a very, very intelligent football player. Like, mm-hmm. he is. There was an article somebody, I think it was Monday Morning Quarterback, did last year about him. Might have been Breer. I can't remember who it was. But it was a pretty deep dive on Gronk, the football player. And I came away really impressed with some of the anecdotes in that story about just how smart a football player he is. That's why I'm anxious to see him in this. Not that you're going to go deep dive film study football analysis on a network studio show pregame, but I'm anxious to see if he's got some opinions where you go, okay, that's a different Gronk than I'm used to seeing in these Tide commercials and things.
But that's
like
where
that.
I wonder. Yeah, I wonder if he'll even have a chance to show that at all. I mean, they don't.
Me too. Yeah,
watch
I do.
These pregame shows. They don't go deep at all. Like,
yeah.
It's not even. It's not. There's no in-depth X and O talk. Like, there's very little actual X and O talk.
Yeah,
that's because there's too many, and they try to make them all talk because they're all stars and got big egos. Wouldn't bother me at all. He didn't just replace Terry Bradshaw, whose time has come.
Oh, I like Terry Bradshaw. Almost for that specific reason. I just want a fun, lovable, that's my, you think he's drunk, but he's not actually drunk uncle.
I like Terry Bradshaw. I like him in casino commercials a little better than the studio show. John, what's going on in the Chronicle the next few days?
I'm
going
to write about Reed and O'Brien talking about each other's quarterback when they were scouting them, and then I've got something on the tight ends. Aaron Wilson will be writing every day. He's going to do something about the Texans, how they contain Patrick Mahomes, and thank you guys very much.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for all well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.